Yes, good evening, dear listeners. Welcome to Business and Economic Segment with me, David Shombe. And let us thank Helmut and Dwight with their home run program. And as it has always been the case, this is the platform that we discuss business affairs, economic affairs, and everything that affect our bread and butter. And it's the 13th of October, 2025. We are progressing at an understandable pace toward the end of the year. That is why this evening, at this hour, before we go to the conversation that we have for today, we are always encouraging you, we are always telling you to say, look at the years, look at the numbers, look at, time, because time wasted is an income lost, and time wasted, will never come back. That's why you need to understand that every hour that you're waking up, you are given the same 24 hours that everybody get. But ask yourself this question, why some people make out the most out of those 24 hours, and why am I struggling also to make use of those 24 hours that I'm given? The fact that you are healthy, the fact that you are listening to Business and Economic Segment, it means that you can do something. It means that you can contribute positively to the national development. You can contribute positively to your community development. That is why the question that we always ask is to say, what have you been talking about? What have you been discussing? Who were you discussing with? How much time do you spend talking about important things? And how much time do you spend in adding value to your life? Because we are always asking these questions, because whatever you do will give a definition of where your future is going to be, how you are going to look like in the future. And also, what is the outcome of the discussions that you are having and with who? That's why they are saying, your net wealth is defined by the most five people that you spend time with. The most five people that you spend time with would define who you are, because somebody does not need to ask you a question. I just have to look at who are those five people that you spend most of the time with, because that is a definition of your character. If you spend that time with those who are not productive, you will be running an unproductive, life. If you are spending time with mentors, you are spending time with those who have capacity, energy, and are positive about the future, that is the definition of your life. But if you are spending time with negative people who always gossip and speaking about unproductive things, that is exactly how your life is going to be. That's why we are always making sure that this economic discussion should not only be about numbers, but we also have what we call behavior economics. What do you think about? What do you do? What are the behaviors of economic participators and what are the behaviors of economic actors? So yeah, before we go ahead, make sure that you read the Villager newspaper. The Villager newspaper is out. Make sure that you read the Villager newspaper so that you can get content and context of the economy. And also make sure that you follow us at our social media platform. A lot of things are happening. Before we go to the main discussion for today, you need to look at a lot of things are happening. Look at global affairs. You may be able to see, that there's an ongoing economic or trade war where China tightened its export control of rare earth materials or rare earth metals, which also made United States of America very...
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Which also made United States of America very angry, to that extent that they imposed 100% tariffs against China. And the question that you're asking yourself is that who is going to be impacted by this restriction? What move motivated China to make sure that they put control over the rare earth metals that are being sold outside China? And also to make sure that all the companies that are selling, or all the companies or foreign companies that are in this venture of rare earth metals who have or will need to obtain special approvals from Beijing, and if they wish to export this rare earth magnet, and also And also, the materials that have at least 0.1% heavier metals, from China. And this is, another move of protectionist, another move of protectionism. And it's also another move of, making sure that, when it comes to trade war, when it's coming to imposition of tariffs, it's not only China who is losing, it's also those American companies that are operating, and also other, or companies from other countries that are in that sector, especially exporting of rare earth metals. We also need to look at what is the use of these rare earth metals, and what are these rare earth metals? For those of you who did physics, for those of you who are interested in science, you must be able to realize that some of these rare earth metals, there is samarium, there is also dorinium, terbium, dysprosium, and many others. And in most cases, these metals are used for technological devices. You talk about x-rays, you talk about computers, you talk about, cell phones, you talk about medical equipment. And in this case, it's a war which is going on, or it's a trade war which is going on, where the U.S. also, the president has also announced that the effectiveness of tariffs against China, that is 100% imposition of tariffs. And something that we need to look at. Something that we need to look at to say who is going to be affected when China also decided to retaliate in terms of tariffs. And yeah, looking at the other news, what's happening in Madagascar. What's happening in Madagascar is very interesting, and it's also quite unfortunate as the country turned into chaos, where you also be able to see the military unit has also joined the protest, and be able also to see that this military which took control, and the general who is in charge, or the military officer who is in charge of that control, indicated to say, and there is no soldier who should obtain instruction of shooting civilians. There is no soldier who can obtain the instruction of shooting civilians. And the military unit, it stated that it's the same military unit that have helped the president of Madagascar to come to power. That is in 2009. But you'll be able to realize that when it's coming to Madagascar, seems like the government have lost its control over the civilian population after 2 weeks of protests, especially motivated by the Generation Z. These are the young people who are protesting in the street at the center of the capital city of Madagascar, Antananarivo. And they are also indicating that they are very tired of the shortage of water, shortage of electricity. And you must remember that President Andry Rajoelina is the head of SADC. He's the head of SADC. And it's for the first time in the history of SADC where there is a chaos at the, in a country where the person who was supposed to be, or the person who is the head of SADC, is a president. So the first time, you also see that how is SADC going to move forward, looking at that situation? And yeah, and also, how is the future of Africa looking like? How come the end of our government? Why is government continue to be toppled by the military? Is it the future of African democracy? Or how come Africa is still busy trying to put his house in order where situations of people on the ground are not improving? And what can be done to make sure that there is stability in Africa and there is also good governance, particularly to those who are in charge of exercising the power of the state on behalf of the civilians? It's quite not a very good news. It's quite not a very good news, because remember, when there's a chaos in the country, it's not only that country which is going to suffer, it's also your trading partner, and it's also the countries which are going to suffer the effect. Because if you look at the refugees which are in SADC region, you look at, you can even talk about Namibia, because a chaos in Mozambique, a chaos in Madagascar, chaos in in Zambia or Zimbabwe. It's also a chaos in Namibia because there is always an impact of what that conflict going to produce, because people start running around. And many people have asked a question to say, why do we have young Angolan people selling out in the street? Selling out in the street, they are clefts. And why do we have these people here? One thing that we need to understand is that when drought is in the country, when chaos is in the country, human beings will try to find a way to survive. That is why you meet these people in the street. Some of them, they may have documents. Some of them, they do not have documents, but just trying their best to make sure that they survive. That is something that Africa as a whole, and SADC in particular, must work on to make sure that when it's coming to that context, at least the basic human needs are dealt with. Look at people are discussing about shortage of water, protesting about shortage of electricity. And I think it's also something that we need to appreciate sometimes, because if other countries are complaining or other countries are protesting about shortage of electricity and water, we may have it here, although not affordable, especially electricity. But something also that we must be proud of is that if you want to see your progress, you must also look at others, because there is always somebody who wants to be like you. Although Namibian young people are suffering due to unemployment, there are things that we must be appreciating about why we are speaking on internet online, why we are connected to electricity. Other people are going for days at a blackout. But that is a discussion of another day. And yeah, what we are looking at today we are looking at the report by World Bank, and that is African Pass. It's also an analysis on issues shaping African economic future. And we are also looking at the future of African job market, and also how is job creation in Africa. And that report is titled Pathways to Job Creation in Africa. What are the statistics saying? What are the numbers saying? Where are we going to be as a continent? And also, what are some of the recommendations? Looking at the executive summary of this report, one will be able also to understand that when it's coming to economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa, it is stated that sub-Saharan Africa maintain momentum amid, you know, global policy uncertainty. It is indicated that, you know, although there is global uncertainty, although there is a trade war, although there is a physical war with, you can talk about Russia and Ukraine, Israel and Gaza. You can also talk about what have happened between Israel and Iran and many other places. It's stated that although there is uncertainty in the world, the continent of Africa, or sub-Saharan Africa to be in particular, maintain momentum with economic growth taking position. Stated that from following the 2023 regional activity is expanding at 3.8% in 2025. And that is from 3.5 in 2024, which is showing a positive, development in African economy. However, in this sector, it's always important to look at when the economy is growing, who is benefiting. When the economy is growing in Africa, who is getting that fruits of growth? Because remember, the presentation of the quarterly report of NAMFISA, where I look at where they gave a presentation of the expansion of the asset of non-banking, assets. Then I'll be able also to say that when it's coming to these non-banking assets, you look at the insurance companies, you look at the short-term and long-term insurance companies, you look at institutions of pension funds, then you're also asking yourself a question to say, when it's coming to this non-banking sector, how is an ordinary person connected, or how is a proletarian connected to this sector. Then one thing that you have to realize is only that an ordinary person in most cases is only connected with the access of finance. When people speak about Nafisa, one person can relate to, especially those who are not able to be at the scale of an advanced person or the unbankable. They can only relate to Nafisa. When people speak about microlenders, then people speak about microlenders, people speak about microfinance, those small, institutions which give loans. That's the only way a person can be connected to that. Then you're asking yourself to say, when the economy is growing, who is benefiting? Who own these short-term and long-term insurance companies? And how is an ordinary person benefiting from this? What is the direct and indirect impact of non-banking sector to national development? Because where there is no fund, when there is no access to finance, is also the difficulty of a local company, the difficulty of SME operators. And yeah, looking at that aspect, one will also be able to see that in per capita terms, when you look at growth, the real income per capita stated that sub-Saharan Africa has been insufficient to lead to significant reduction in extreme poverty. Stated that although there is growth in terms of the economy, when it's coming to sub-Saharan Africa, there have been insufficient, move, especially when it's coming to reduction of extreme poverty, especially when it's coming to improvement of income distribution. Because one thing that you need to ask yourself is that when you look at for a country like Namibia, when you look at a country like South Africa, when you look at Botswana, Angola, Ghana, and many other countries, look at the population growth. When the population is growing, what is the margin of economic inequality in that country? Because one thing that we need to put in mind is that although the economy is growing, sub-Saharan Africa, the records have showed that when it comes to sub-Saharan Africa, reduction of poverty, improvement of income distribution is still a challenge. It's still a challenge. And it stated that the real income per capita in the region is projected to grow at 1.3% in 2025, up from 1% in 2024. And it's expected to reach 1.9% by 2026 to 2027. Now, although this mark is a recovery from decades of successive shocks, one will also want to ask to say, when IMF give a prediction, when World Bank give a prediction, when African Development Bank gave a projection and adjusted its projection, when there is a projection of saying Zimbabwe in 2025 is growing 6% in its economy, the question that has always been asked and the question that we continue to ask is that what does it mean to an ordinary person? Who is going to benefit from that? Because now, looking at international trade, you'll be able also to see that when it comes to gold, for example, gold is in demand. It's a historical hit of 4,000, US per ounce. You'll be able also to see that there is quite a development, and also to see that when it comes to that country, such as yes, we are continuing with business and economic segment. And as we indicated, we are looking at the report on job pathway in sub-Saharan Africa. The report in, pathways to job creation in sub-Saharan Africa. What is it saying? What is it saying about the economic growth of Africa? And also what he's saying about job creation in Africa. And they are very, interesting development that you need to look at, because first what you need to do is to understand that where we are standing now, Africa is the only, continent in the world with a youth population, or is the only continent in the world with the youngest population. And it's expanding in terms of its population. it's expanding in terms of, its population. And it has also attracted a lot of investors in various sectors such as mining, the field of, marine, the field of, climate change, talk about climate finance and all those things. But now, what is very interesting is this, the demographic expansion, especially in terms of the population. Because I've been telling people to say, if you want to see the growth of Africa, don't wait for global statistics like what we are reading now. Compare with what's happening within your country. Look at, for example, Windhoek. Windhoek has been increasing with not less than 3% every year. It's now over 500,000 people which are living in Windhoek. Then you also need to look at now, when you look, for example, at a population like the population of Windhoek, which is our capital city, you must be able also to understand that how many of these people that are living in Windhoek, how many of these 500,000 people that have proper housing, how many of these people have proper medical care, how many of these have access to electricity, clean water, sanitation, safety and security, food, and also how many of these are working, at what level of jobs, and what will happen to Windhoek in the next 20 years. Because remember, population increment has also, it also has to do with, there's also an involvement on how you are going to handle that population increment. How is the city of Windhoek going to, to accommodate and handle these people? How are the service going to be given? Because service delivery was not supposed to be an issue of argument. To say, no, we have also tried to build, roads here. We have also tried to give electricity. We are recording all the kombucha and all these things. That was not supposed to be a question of debate. It was supposed to be when, how, and also how people can participate in the economy. How safe are the people? Go to Havan. Even people themselves from that, informal sector, they are scared of working during the, not even during the night. Every evening, people are already running home. People are dying there. Criminal activities are happening at an informal sector. Gender-based violence, although it's happened in different parts, but where there is poverty, there is also a high chance of economic dependency. There is high chance of alcohol abuse. There is high chance of, drug abuse. And there is high chance of, gender-based violence, which is cutting across. So, yeah. This report stated that Sub-Saharan Africa is undergoing the largest, fastest demographic shift in the world. And that is now in recent history. And between 2025 and 2050, the region working age population is projected to expand than any other developing region. Additionally, it also stated that it's going to end more than 620 million people to its labor force. 620 million people to the labor force. These people are the ones who are going to occupy jobs in Africa. But what is very interesting is that representing more than three quarter of the net increase across all emerging markets and developing economies. What is very interesting is that these jobs, the report indicated that, however, most of new labor market entrants find work in the low productivity informal sector, which offer limited prospects for rapid income growth. Now, with wage-paying jobs make up to 24% of employment, and less if Southern Africa is excluded. Now, looking at this context, is that okay? The population of Africa has continued to increasing. The demographic expansion of the population of Africa, and with a prediction of addition of 620 million to the labor force. However, most of these people that are going to work, they are going to work at low productivity sector. I need to work at, you know, our informal sector. And it's also a question of sustainability to say, how are we going to deal with poverty? How are we going to address the issue of extreme poverty in Africa when the situation is like this? Those are the questions that, everybody must continue asking to say, when people are saying Namibia should participate in the economy, somebody should not just participate in the economy when I'm selling biscuits in the corner of Havana, or in the corner of Tamara location, or in DRC, in the corner of, you know, Twaroloka and many other places. But it must be meaningful participation in the economy. Today in the morning we're discussing with Nino regarding the aspect of, you know, payroll deduction system, to say what will happen to the ordinary, the unbankable, the downtrodden people. What will happen to them? How is their social protection? How are they protected? Because ask yourself this question. We are already, or the country is already running on the social welfare. It's running at that. You have already people being catered for, either it's pensioners, it's disabled people, children, orphans, and veterans. But at the same time, we still have an emergency. We still have an emergency, especially to the active generation. Now, this report is also telling us is to say, although the economy is going to expand, the distribution of that, economy, or the distribution of that economy, the economic expansion in terms of number, is not necessarily going to benefit directly the needy. It's like, and I'm saying this with much respect, you see commercial banks making profit. Yes, they participate in economic development, but when you are looking at this profit, you're asking yourself to say, whose money is this? And also, what is an ordinary Namibian making? And who owned these, commercial banks? It's not a matter of being envious about those who own commercial banks. What can ordinary Namibians do? What happened to the indigenous banks, black banks? What happened to them? We had SME, it went into the thin air. Kaput, nothing, nowhere to be found. It will never come back. How can economy be equally distributed? And also, how can an ordinary person participate? And also, how can, people within a certain country own their resources? You've tried having SME. It's done. It's nowhere to be found, untraceable. And business continue as it has been. Now, looking at now this report by World Bank, especially looking at job creation in Africa, looking at the focus in terms of job creation in Africa, one must also be able to look at, apart from pathways to job creation in Africa, apart from adding 620 million people to the labor force, apart from ending these people, there's an indication to say these people are going to work in the raw productive informal sectors. What can be done moving forward? Because the report also have proposed communication. They also have recommendation to say, for us to move forward, for us not only to look at economic growth in terms of number, for us not to overjoy when we speak about 5% increment, when we speak about countries such as Zimbabwe, a 6% increment in 2025, when we speak about gold in the world reaching the highest, reaching the price of $4,000 per ounce. And that is a scale of calculating, scale of weighing, actually, the gold. If it's reaching that standard, what does it mean to an ordinary person? Because these are the things that we don't only need to discuss about. We need to find ways, formulas, mechanisms, strategies, and also, ways that the economy should not only measure in terms of number, but economy should be measured in terms of how is this economy going to impact an ordinary person who is on the ground. Now, there is unlocking drivers of employment growth. It is stated that large-scale job creation in the region will only occur when the reduction in the cost of doing business enable enterprises to attract high growth firms to enter the market. This is exactly what is needed, because to say for you to drive employment, the cost of doing business should be reduced. Because remember, ask yourself this question: why do you think smaller businesses take time to register themselves with BIPA and all this relevant authority? Why do you think is that? Because the cost of doing business in Namibia is expensive. The cost of doing business is expensive because after completing that process, you may end up have used the money that is equal to the stock that you are having, or you may not be able to continue operating anymore for the next 3 months. Because that is the situation, because if authorities find a way to reduce the cost of doing business, the cost of requirements, the cost of license, because one thing that you need to realize is that when somebody enter the business industry, when somebody is registering a business, you realize to say government and other authority or agencies will be able to realize that they are also doing business with this person already at the beginning. So you need to pay for this license, you need this requirement, you need to pay. It looks little, but it is discouraging poor people. It is discouraging people who want to enter business, because to them, they already want to make money. They want to make money and establish their foundation. But at that ground, the cost of doing business is not only in Namibia. Is in many other countries. To say, compared to the developed world, how should entrepreneurs, how should the youth, how should business people being protected, particularly with over requirements that that of who does not have money may even end up to say, are these just barriers put on my way so that I'm not going to be able to reach my destination? Or is it really what is needed? Ask yourself this question. How many young people who have better ideas, better projects, did not make it through the phase one of the pilot project of Youth Fund? Why did they not make it? Could it be that they have failed to comply with this requirement? Could it be the expensiveness of doing business? Could it be the expensiveness of proving that you have, follow all the standards? Because now, by the time this person start operational, by the time this person start doing business, the person is you are already tired. You are already financially drained. You are tired. You lose innovation, because the aim of doing business was supposed to be making profit and also recruiting people. And that is what we talk about, employment. Because if the existence of public sector is to absorb everybody, if the existence of public sector is not effective, it will not assist progress. If a lot of people depend much on public sector just for job security, which is quite understandable. But job security doing what? Because we miss the point here to say, what is the reason of somebody working? We miss that point. When you are working for a government, you are making money. That's why you are paid. Don't just say you are an officer, you are an administrator there, you are a director. You are working actually. It's the same job, or it's the same, analysis that should be used to view somebody who is, for example, selling a reduction, because you are paid because you are making money. You are working at that area. But if you are not effective, it's only that in government, there is no actual measure to say this is what you are bringing in, because it's public service, and you cannot really explain it to an ordinary person. This is how you are making money, or this is how you become operational. But do you understand that when there is no evaluation to say what is the competency of this institution, what is the competency of this agency, what is the competency of this ministry, if there is no evaluation, we will continue to have a bloated public sector, which is not effective. And you may also find somebody who can go to work without knowing what you are going to do. Have you seen that there are people in Namibia who can go to work, but if you ask that person to say, you go to the office, but what do you really do? Can you explain to me what do you really do? They only go there and sit down and play games. You work when it's needed, or you are just carrying boxes. And you are asking yourself, why can't we find proper ways of doing things? Why can't we find proper ways of doing things? Why can't we boost the effectiveness of our public sector? And also to look at how we can expand the economy, how we can improve the satisfaction of life. Because life satisfaction is crucial for a human being. Life satisfaction, security, medical care, housing, and also freedom. Because you find yourself, when you are using the scale of analysis of the basic human needs, you find yourself that you only have few people who actually have all those rights recognized, and who are satisfied, or who are, their basic needs are met. But when you look at the majority, it's a trade-off. You can have housing, but you do not have food security. That's why there was an example of a cleaner who had been working, and he's only working to pay electricity and water without looking at progress, or you are only working to get something to buy food, and there is no growth. And when you look at the analysis done on why do people in government and the private sector going to go to micro lenders to get money, you'll be shocked to realize that some people are just going there even to get money to buy food for survival. So that's why when you speak about the aspect of creation of or job creation in Africa, when you look at this report by World Bank, you may also be able also to see that one of the proposed mechanism to change things to a better is the reduction in the cost of doing business. If those who want to do business find it very difficult to start and register their business, then how will these people have momentum to work hard, expand their businesses, and also recruit people? And yeah, the other thing is also that was mentioned here is foundational infrastructure, from transport, network, to general purpose technologies like energy, digital system. It's critical for unlocking growth across productive sectors. Now, I want you to ask yourself a question to say, when was the last time that you have used a train for transportation? When was the last time that you have used a train for transport? How effective are our trains? At what level are they? In what condition are they? Are we even at that point of discussing about, railways? In what conditions are they? Because if you don't come to that real conversation, then we must forget about, the industrialization that you are speaking about. What is the investment on a real issue, such a real, sector such as railway? Because remember, although Namibia is number one in terms of having good road infrastructure, better road infrastructure, in terms of the ratio of its population and also the number of accidents, you'll be able to realize that when you go to the website of MVF, and you'll be able to realize that every day we have lost so much great people, human capital, due to road accidents. When you look at statistics, especially accidents, which either is accident which including residents, including pedestrian, you'll be shocked. You'll be shocked to say, what is so much price in better road infrastructure, but we are still not using these roads correctly? Could it be that that is the only thing that we have? Could it be that the space which was supposed to be used by trains, we are also using everything at railways? Look at trucks. Ask yourself this question. And you need to take it very clearly to say, how many trucks are in one train? How many trucks are in one train? And the reduction of that number of trucks, how many life you could have saved, and how many accidents you could have avoided? Because part of development, signs of development, is better, strong railway connectivity. Because in terms of logistics, a train can reduce congestion in road by making sure that if you are transporting, for example, copper from Zambia to Walvis Bay port, instead of having 80 trucks, you just need one train, one route, one trip. Then you have saved energy, you are fast, you are efficient, and you can focus on other things. But the question that we need to ask ourselves, what is our investment, especially in Namibia? Let us ask ourselves this question. What is our investment in railway infrastructure? This is what the report is saying. These are the things which we are supposed to be put on the scale. Then there is also something that was stated here to say, when you look at Africa, there is limited access to electricity, and frequent power outage remain top barriers. So business operation in Africa consistently highlighted by FEM as a major contributor to high operational cost. For instance, unreliable electricity in sub-Sahara Africa. And here it's not a news, because when you speak about unreliable electricity, look at South Africa, look at Mozambique, look at Madagascar, which is one of the costs of the chaos which is happening now. But the question that we need to ask ourselves is that, in terms of Namibia, how are we dealing with the issue of energy? How are we dealing with the issue of electricity? What will happen to electricity payment in bulk next year? Is NAMPA still going to come and give the proposal to say, this is what we want to do because of continuation of increment in terms of price of electricity. Look at how much Namibia is buying from South Africa. How much Namibia is buying from South Africa in terms of electricity. Look at the celebration of Eskom making profit actually for the first time after quite a very long time. But what is this telling us? This is telling us that when Eskom is making profit, we are paying more. Those who are buying from Eskom are paying more. And the records are saying Namibia spend around 1.5 billion on electricity. Yeah, we are indicating that when Namibia is spending 1.5 billion in buying of electricity from South Africa per year, you must be able to understand that it's going to be very difficult moving forward if you are not sorting out our issues of energy. Now, let us look at this report. There is an aspect of digital economy, especially when you are looking at the progress of Africa. What are the things that need to be done? It's indicated that policy priority should focus on reduction of the cost and barriers in adopting the use of digital technologies, which have been shown to increase foreign direct investment. And that is what is stated. What you also need to understand is that when you look, for example, at what World Trade Organization have indicated, that when it's coming to selling, when it's coming to the trade of digital products, when it's coming to the trade of digital products, is one of the things that boosted economic growth, and it's one of the things that regardless of the tariffs, it's showing positive, boost or positive movement, especially when it comes to the economic growth. Remember that in the next 20 years, those people who are digitally advanced, people who are technologically wise, people who are using apps such as Eagle FM app, such as Imba app, people who are, not only owning cell phones, not only owning computers, but those who are technologically advanced. That is why the investment in technology, the investment in, digital economy should be prioritized, because you'll find companies which still exist now that are operating fully online. The HR is online, finance is happening online, you are working from home, you are paid from home, and you are doing the work when you are at home. And there is something which is very interesting, because there is also when you look at this report, it also stated that the arrival of submarine fiber optic cables in Africa significantly improve the access to high speed internet, leading to employment which gain of 5 to 7% in countries such as Benin, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ghana, Kenya, Namibia, Nigeria, Togo, Tanzania, these countries. That's why the reports on job creation in sub-Saharan Africa recommend that national strategies should promote affordable access and expand of digital infrastructure, strengthening data system, and supported by shared facilities and hubs for entrepreneurship and training. Yes, this is a very good recommendation, but the question that you may also want to ask is that investment in digital economy, how safe is that, especially in the developing world? How safe is that? How safe is investment in digital economy in Namibia? How is our defense system in terms of cyber crime? How is our defense system in terms of cyber attack? because we cannot only talk about accessibility to those digital infrastructure. We also need to speak about the safety of those digital infrastructure. The safety of those digital infrastructure. Because for the past month, we have seen cyber crime, cyber security incidents, cyber crimes, ransomware attacks at agencies of government, at ministries, critical ministries such as health, at companies which were supposed to store our data. But that is a discussion that we should expand to say when World Bank is indicating that there is going to be an expansion in terms of informal jobs, what does it mean to human development? When the prediction is saying by 2040, there will be an increment of over 600 million into the labor force. But all these people, especially in Africa, they are going to work in a sector with a lower productivity. What does it mean? And what does it mean when World Bank is stating that when it comes to Africa, the cost of doing business is expensive? The cost of doing business is expensive. And what does it mean when there is a saying to say there must be an expansion in railways? Ask yourself that question to say, in terms of Namibia, when was the last time that I've used a train? How safe are those trains? What are they transporting? Why do we have a lot of trucks in the road then is necessary? Why is that? How is Namibia roads going to look like? Yes, dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to Business and Economic segment. And from me, David Shombe, bye for now. And see you tomorrow, same time, same place. And do not forget to like, share, and follow us at our social media platform. Do not forget to read the Villager newspaper. And do not forget to comment, because that is our point of interaction. That is our point of interaction. And bye-bye for now. I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Omtuma team. Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chambi, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook, and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours. Mm. I need to tune into Eagle FM. Business Economic segment is about to play now.
Yes, listen to Business and Economic segment with David Shombe from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade, and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM, the eye.